Okay, now it's time.
There, look at Laura's right on time.
2 minutes.
No, that's the clock is 2 minutes late.
It's bagel time again, Toby.
All right, good morning. I'll call over the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, August 14, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you. Good morning. First item, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment really on anything you'd like to comment on. So if there's anybody wishing to do so, come on up. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, this morning we have presentation, a quarterly presentation from the Ames Economic Development Commission. Brenda and Dustin moving, but I see we also have Dan Colhane with us today. We've got to have wise words from Dan before this is all said and done.
Well, I asked him if he wanted to talk, and he said, no, I'll just be an observer. So I'm sure if you have questions,
we'll make sure there's a question.
He'll be glad to answer that. So,
good morning.
Good morning. Good to see the three of you. We'll actually be updating you on two major things today in our quarterly report. I'm going to start first with workforce and give you a glimpse of some of the things we're doing as it relates to workforce, and again, wouldn't be possible without your very generous support of our efforts. So, a month or so ago, there was a question related to kind of breaking down the revenue that we received to support our workforce efforts. And rather than speak out of turn, and because of our differences in our fiscal years, I wanted to make sure I was giving you accurate numbers. So if we look, our fiscal year runs from January through December. So if you look at the revenue we received to support our workforce efforts, you are the most generous of our supporters, single-handedly at $40,000 a year. And again, that is an increase. And as we put our plan of work together for our current year, we just saw really a need to buckle down and almost double our efforts as it relates to workforce. And so without your generous support, we wouldn't have been able to do that. So, and then the City of Ames also a new contributor this year and are contributing $15,000 for our workforce efforts. And then what I've done is we collect from our private sector $61,000. So as you look at the private-public partnership, again, a perfect example of how we've collected more now from the private sector. And as I look at that list, part of the reason I wanted to include that is it's very diversified across our industry sectors, and it's also very diversified geographically. So we've got a Story City, we've got a Huxley contributor, and again, well represented from across our industry. So that's really where we're at with revenue, and I would tell you that I just had a chance to look at our July numbers, and we're pretty much right on track to where we thought we would be. We enter the summer months with our internship programming, and those do take quite a bit of our dollars. So, but again, that's where we're at from a revenue standpoint. Let's talk a little bit about unemployment. And June and July are interesting months for Story County in terms of unemployment. Should be a surprise to anybody that when you have an influx of 36,000 people, that when they disappear for the summer months, your unemployment number is affected. So what's most important to look at that is we look at June to June. So a year ago, you know, it's rather new in the organization. I think Dan would attest how I had an out-of-body experience when I saw 2.9%. But actually, as we dug into the numbers, there's about 3,000 people that move in terms of employment with the university, so, and related businesses. So actually, our June number for Story County was at 2%. So that's really the important number as we look at June and July, is where are we at from a year ago. So if you look at the snapshot in June, we're really at 1,200 jobs that have been added, and Iowa Workforce Development tagged 900 of those to the private sector.
And let's just talk about that one for a minute, because what's interesting to me is, as you track the numbers going way back, from 2000 to 2010, we only added 500 private sector jobs in that entire decade. So we just added almost twice as much in one calendar year than we added in an entire decade, 2000 to 2010.
And I think about how 1,200 people is so much bigger than some of even of our communities in one year. So it is, when you step back and you look at that, it is truly amazing. And very, very, very few places in Iowa, even though the economy is strong, can really look at that strong of job growth. In terms of our networking efforts and in terms of the efforts we do to try to reach out to kind of our HR folks specifically, obviously we're talking to our existing industry more than this, but this is really related to workforce discussions. So it's a hot topic with our business and industry. We've had 302 connections since the first of the year, 91 face-to-face visits, and a total of 50 different Story County businesses have been talked to specifically about how can we assist them in implementing part of our Workforce Solutions program to support their efforts. So we've just continued to have great response from our businesses. While they're concerned about the tight labor market, I think those that are willing to do something a little different and implement some additional strategies, they are finding people. And so our especially opportunities that are full-time with benefits, those folks are getting people, and I know our service sector is impacted. So a little bit on our networking efforts as it relates to workforce. Work in Eames, which is really kind of the key driver. We've got to first connect the job seeker to the jobs we have available. So we ended July with almost 75,000 searches on Work in Eames, and I think we can do better with the push to the end of the year. The number, I'll jump down to the bottom bullet. We're at an all-time high, at least in my tenure, in terms of jobs posted on Work in Eames. So there were well over 1,600 the last couple weeks. So we need to be continuing to enhance our efforts to promote Work in Eames, drive those searches up even further to get people to the job postings. So Facebook likes, Twitter, continue to drive a lot of messages through our digital marketing efforts. We have 569 people registered as job seekers on workinames.com. So I remind our employers frequently, I start there. It doesn't cost anything to search through those registered job seekers. And then we have 278 employers. So I would note, I don't see Alyssa in the audience, but I saw a number of jobs come through for Story County this morning. So somebody's been busy here posting something. So
I was saying, hey, before we move on from workforce.
I'm not quite done with workforce.
Okay.
Yet.
All right. Well, I want you to talk to us at some point about the outreach you've been doing in Marshall County. And
oh, sure.
Seeing anything from
yep,
that.
And that's actually my presentation today. So
okay.
We just wrapped up.
Oh, we have a map slide.
Okay. Oh, Laura, now you're really, let's see. I'm going to have Justin help me out with this. Oh, there we are.
These so
are
on the 1,600 jobs posted, what's the geographic footprint of that? Are you 30 miles or from Ames?
Oh, those are only Story County jobs, really. And occasionally, sometimes something from Boone slips in, but really, honestly, we pull pretty much Story County jobs. So the other, it's those are ours, more or less. So Thanks for asking that. So I want to talk a little bit about our internship program, and can't really see the photo, but we had a fabulous group of interns that participated in our See Yourself in Ames internship program. What a great opportunity we have to, this year we made a very conscious effort to get them away from campus. And so we were in all different sorts of venues around Ames. We averaged 149 registrants for each event. Now, sometimes if they don't pay, they sometimes get better offers and don't show up. But real strong registrations, real strong participation. We actually hosted the Des Moines intern group at our South event, co-hosted with the Cultivation Corridor. Lots of real positive. We kind of did that in conjunction with the board meeting. So the AEC board and the chamber board had an opportunity to mingle with the interns as well. And then we had, on average, about 18 different Story County employers represented. So as we look to 19, some of the feedback we've seen is, you know, by the time I get done working, I have other things I want to do. So I think you'll see us look to next year, maybe do a couple smaller events, some larger events, do a breakfast event, do a lunch event, to make sure that we're expanding the opportunity and the number of employers that are having a chance to be impacted by the programming. So, again, an important part of what we do. Homebase Iowa, again, we wouldn't be able to support, be a part of this program without your generous support on the local incentive program. So since Leanne and I and Brett really energized the efforts as it related to Homebase Iowa last September, so really in almost a year, we've collected 150 resumes matched to Story County. We had one bad email in the mix, so we actually sent an introduction email to 149. We've been following up with notes, personal notes from our offices. I would note that Leanne does the same for Story County. We followed up with emails and relocation videos. We've sent out the Snazzy Smart Choice book. We've actually seen our home base in Iowa employers grow by 20 or 30 in the last year, which we're very excited about that. And the one thing I would tell you is I hear from about a third of them, and they always drop me a little message of how impressed they are that we take the time to follow up with them personally. And, you know, they're interesting matches to make in terms of a really unique experience, but I know I've gotten two of them committed. We've actually had our interns this summer do stories, and our goal is to actually release those stories around Veterans Day to feature what's going on. I know that I had one last week interviewing at Iowa State, and I told them, just be patient. It's a long process, but we're even our largest employer is committed to interviewing some folks out of the program. So very excited about that. And again, I'll be participating next week in the first virtual career fair that Homebase Iowa is hosting. So very excited about that opportunity to have a chance to dialogue virtually, and then we'll connect our employers to those folks that are participating in that event.
Bridget, since you're able to see the resumes that are matched and match the Story County, those are available to members of the public then also?
So, actually what happens is our Homebase Iowa employers, this is a secret to why you need to be a Homebase Iowa employer, and it's not a whole lot of work anymore to be that. They're actually matched to those resumes that come in that match the type of jobs they have. So they automatically match. I actually see all of them. I see anybody that's indicated an interest in Story County comes to me. We create those in a database, and then we share those out with our workforce sponsors, or if I see something specifically that I know matches our openings. So the openings also come through me, so that's how I can kind of somewhat at any point in time know what our job openings are.
But we're spending money. I mean, we pay for that program here at the county. So I'm really asking if they're public records.
I guess they could be. I know that they do come to Leanne and Brett. Leanne, I share them with them every week. So they do have those. So I I suppose it could be. I guess okay. Nobody's asked. But they do have them. At least I try to remember, Leanne, right, to send it to you every week so that they can do their follow-up. So if you ever wanted those, Leanne and Brett have them. I have them as well. K-12 engagement. So a couple fun pictures. The Community Academy is something new we sponsored this summer, really focused on STEM. And program is unique because it was preschool through through 12th grade. They broke them out into various tracks. They did real life projects out in the community. That program really launched this year, but it will be available countywide moving into next year. Spent some time with some students from Ames, teachers from Ames. Actually took them out into a few of our industries where they had a chance to get tours, actually talked with a panel of employers from the research park. So, again, trying to connect teachers so they have a better understanding of the types of things that are needed by our employers. We were excited when Ames was selected as a future Iowa Summit location. So October 9th, please mark your calendars on that. And you'll see that promoted through our communications. I'm assuming by now maybe some of you have seen that invitation. But that's really an opportunity to hear about the state's initiative to ensure that our graduates are leaving and getting the education they need to take the jobs that we have available in Iowa. And then Ames High is hosting a career fair. Now everybody's like, well, why are you promoting that? Well, this year they've actually opened up the career fair from 9 through 12, so that's 1,450 students. And so I know already some of the county employees have volunteered to assist with that. They're looking for speakers. They have a booth available. Adam Carroll is going to be our featured speaker at that event. It's going to be quite an affair, and what an opportunity to have a chance to mingle with such a large population of students, and quite an undertaking by the school district.
For the Future Ready Iowa on October 9th, I went on and tried to register, and I couldn't, according to the link I got in the press release. Do you have a secret formula to be able to get registered?
I don't, but we better make sure. I'll alert my workforce development today that there was a problem with the link. No, I probably got the same email you did. So, again, we're just looking for opportunities to bring some of those conversations local, and so we're working with workforce development to do that and thinking about parking downtown and those sorts of things. So I want to talk a little bit about Marshalltown and general concern about that workforce. I have found out that there is some disaster recovery that can assist people. I think 26 weeks is the extent of some of that special unemployment. But regardless, there will be a lot of people that want to get to work while they're waiting for businesses to be rebuilt. The numbers impacted are astonishing from a housing standpoint, and really a very large number of businesses impacted, including one very large employer. So I need to applaud the responsiveness of Iowa Workforce Development in Des Moines, stepping in to assist Marshalltown. And so we're going to be doing an event on September 20th at the college, co-hosted with our offices in both Des Moines and Marshalltown Workforce Development. We've already got really strong response from our Story County employers to attend and participate. So based on the response at this one, we'll probably end up following up a few months later with an additional event. So we're on that, we also have a number of our employers that have already started interviewing, actually on site at the workforce development offices in Marshalltown. So, just something we need to be aware of. We'll start to. I haven't seen claims.
I wanted to try to find that this morning. I couldn't. So I guess we'll have to be patient and wait for the unemployment numbers to start to roll in to just see how impacted the community is from an unemployment standpoint. So let's talk a little bit about our efforts to support economic development in the communities under 2000. So the good news is that as we've worked to support the communities, and I think you're all aware that we've got a lot of positive things going on in the 10 communities under 2000, and so much so that we've decided that we needed to kind of divide and conquer the communities in our offices a little bit. So Dustin is going to be assisting me with Gilbert and Roland for now, and we'll be continuing to analyze where else it makes sense. He comes to us with a very strong background in rural communities and great planning services, so I'll still be your point person, but Dustin's going to be helping me out specifically with those two communities to start and rolling into others. And as I share with you our plans for city council coverage in August, I noted where Dustin was also going to be. So as you know, it's hard to hit on Monday nights the council meetings that go on in the county. So it allows us also to ensure that when we need to be in those communities that we're not trying to go from Zeering to Gilbert, you know the conflicts we have. So his help's already been much appreciated in the two communities. So we'll start to stir in Dustin's work into these numbers when we report later this year. We've had 142 just connections and contact, face-to-face visits 43, 33 projects or development-related meetings. We've attended 18 supervisor meetings and 19 council meetings. So, again, with two of us kind of more actively working on this, we should see better attendance at the supervisors' meetings and some additional city council meetings covered. And some highlights I wanted to talk about, that's a picture of the Landis project. If you've not had a chance to get down to the south side of the county, fun things going on down there. We're working on a catalyst building project in Cambridge, so really modeling the efforts of what Zeering did. And so the Legion building in Cambridge, as of last week, actually came to the city. So the Legion is going to start utilizing the community building, the new community building, and now vacating that building on their downtown. Some opportunity for upper story housing in that building. Collins has really been the rock stars in terms of their utilization of the Story County Housing Trust Fund. So I'll look to Greg. I think we have 5 applications, Greg. So they got funding to do a minimum of 4 and, of course, can do more. So work has started on Collins on some of the efforts there. Collins gas station, do we have ground started there yet? Soon. Yes, new soon. And I won't forget one of the first meetings I had in Collins was, I said, what's your highest need? And really, honestly, they said, we just want to buy gas in our community. And they're certainly meeting the needs on things like soda and things that come out of a vending area down in their community. And honestly, their little downtown district is blossomed with some new small business support, and so we've been helping. Okay, we'll be buying fuel in October in Collins. So Gilbert has done their first really urban renewal work on their own, and really to support commercial development on the property that really lies just north of the school. And so Dustin was in Gilbert last night. I assume things went smoothly with one of their final readings as it relates to the rebates they're going to be offering to the commercial development director, or commercial development developer there. The Zeering is well underway on their historic building. I'll be up there tomorrow to get an update on that project. It's taken a while, but Larson Drilling has actually started their site work in Roland. We were enrolling late yesterday, and even just in a matter of days, the additional work to prepare that pad for that building. That's going to be a beautiful pre-engineered souk-up building to support that very, I think it's fourth generational business in Roland. Roland's also working on a new pool. They've got a very energized group of moms, and one dad was at the meeting this weekend to discuss plans for a new pool. Not an aquatic center, just a simple square pool. So we're trying to be helpful to that process. And also, Roland, the development board there, is working to expand their residential and their light industrial areas. So they've identified two landowners that are willing to option some property to the local development board. So kind of some neat highlights, lots of fun, proactive things going on in communities. And just a couple pictures. So the building, the bluish kind of building, is an extreme concrete building that's going into the Cambridge Industrial Park. I think that's probably their last lot. I keep reminding Scott Young and the mayor that we need to be thinking about expansion of that area. Cambridge, the right-hand corner is the work that occurred probably last Friday on the Larson Derling project. And this little whimsical wine trailer gal, her energy towards her little startup business is contagious. So that's Nikki from Collins and her little whimsical wine trailer, actually at Rag Bride. She was over in Cola with me at Rag Bride. And then the lower right-hand corner is a building in Kelly. Have you guys seen the building in Kelly? I don't know what the business is. I have to disclose that. But that is going up on Main Street in Kelly. So very exciting. We'll have to, those of us that are attending the Story County Economic Development Group meeting on Thursday, are going to have to find out what that building is. So, again, thank you for letting us work with your little communities in Story County. It's a treat, and they should certainly keep us busy. Any questions for the team?
Did you send something out in regards to the Catalyst Grant application there in Cambridge that Ron James is helping us on that?
Actually, Ron James was very helpful in zeroing with their building. And I asked Ron if we, our offices, could ask him to assist with Cambridge, and he said, no, I'll just help out in Cambridge. I don't need any compensation or any stipend to support that effort. I'll just help. So, again, is that just not the best Story County story? So he's a great resource. I'm glad to help on historical projects, at least was willing to help out in Cambridge, and so I'll be meeting him tomorrow to talk through the details, and hopefully he can get us through the pre-application phase on the Cambridge building. So we got a lot of that work kind of done already, and Scott and Steve have been very committed to that project and keeping our, and the state's actually been up to see the project as well, and I think they're very interested in supporting that initiative as well. But let's get through the application process.
Super. Thank you. Dustin, how's your first couple months gone?
I'm shedding my greenhorns, so I'm doing well.
Well, we're glad you're here. I'm glad you're working on it. Dan, I told you I wasn't going to let you get away without speaking. Can you give us 30 seconds on how everything's coming together as we look at a consolidated effort for all of Story County, utilizing your staff's talents and efforts?
Morning. Sure. Good morning, folks. Dan Pauling with the Amy Shamer and the Development Commission. It's going well. The Nevada opportunity has really accelerated. Really, our last conversation is with the Story City Economic Development Organization, and we've met on a couple of occasions, and we're talking through what our relationship might be. Historically, we've had a really healthy relationship with Story City for many years. You all remember Rich Olive, a long-time supporter and champion for that community. We worked with Rich for a number of years and just kind of traded things off. And now, since his passing, that organization has changed a little bit, and I think they're looking for a little more assistance from us than what we've historically provided. Typically, we provided some marketing efforts and things like that. They did their own existing industry. Now we're talking about incorporating their existing industry program into ours. so that we've got one point person doing existing industry all over Story County, which we think makes sense and is helpful. What's really unique right now, and I think you all are aware of this, is that there is so much activity in all corners of Story County, and Brenda illustrated that really well today. And it's really, really neat because Brenda's had the keen ability to really demonstrate value in a wide variety of ways across the county, whether it's housing or a new swimming pool. If you called Dan Colhaney a year ago and said, hey, we need a new swimming pool, I would have said, well, we'll find somebody you can talk to. But I probably wouldn't have that answer, but Brenda does. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, we can show value, really, in many respects, on your behalf, since you're the funder of this part of our programming for these communities. So that's been exciting for us as a team, our entire team that works on all these things. That's been exciting to see how we can show value in different ways to different communities. Same time, for the Nevada contract, John Hall leads that contract on our behalf as their executive director. But what's been really fun for, I think, again, our team, is that as projects come together or opportunities present themselves for the Nevada community, it isn't just John, if you will, bearing the burden of that responsibility. We're sharing that, and we're plugging different people in and providing different skill sets to whatever the process might entail. And so it's a pretty exciting time. You know, I've said this for many years in Ames, but I can say this unabashedly about Story County right now. It's a great time to be here because we've got meaningful economic activity in all parts of the county. And, you know, I see occasionally on social media someone will say, I need a job, and there are no jobs in Ames or in Story County. And then you see Brenda's report this morning, and you see the kind of data we see on a regular basis in our office. And if people would call us, and you know, frankly, we're not a job agency, but if people call, we'll hunt something down. We'll provide opportunities, or at least provide them different ways to find meaningful opportunities for themselves. And so there's a robust employment opportunities that exist out there. And, you know, I think that's the business we're in. We're in the business of placing people, frankly. And if we can help someone find an opportunity, we'll go to all ends to do that. And so, as always, we appreciate the support of the Board of Supervisors. It's fun coming over here because, frankly, it's pretty easy talking about fun stuff like Brenda and Dustin talked about this morning. So I'll answer any further questions. If there's nothing else, I just thank you for your time this morning.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I said Friday morning at our AEDC executive meeting, and I'll say it now in front of everybody, what's really cool to watch, so the AEDC and Story County have built a pretty nice program, right? Drew Camp's efforts were outstanding as we ramped that thing up. But now Brenda Dreyer has become the first call for most of our mayors and city clerks throughout the county on any issue. Doesn't expect the same thing out of you on the cities that you're going to lead. What a cool resource to have for our smallest towns. And I wanted to be sure you heard that here in front of everybody. But I think there was major consensus in our executive committee meeting how fortunate we are with the team you've put together, Dan.
We're far more effective in deploying what you asked for as a result of these two people in particular. So yeah, Drew did a great job, but we are in a good spot. We're in a real good spot right now, given the previous expertise of both Brenda and Dustin. Dustin's got an extensive background, and the guy's from rural Georgia. He loves rural America, so this is a really good fit for him, too. So
it's good stuff. So I think about, it's been 4 or 5 years since you sat in that chair and talked to the board about what the AEDC could do as we went through that whole process of determining, and there were a lot of naysayers about spending $100,000 on this kind of effort. For me, it's gone beyond my wildest dreams or expectations. What's your assessment of our first, whatever it's been, 4 or 5 years?
Oh, I share the exceeding expectations because again, 5 years ago, we were talking about marketing sites and buildings and bringing traditional economic development across Story County. And if I've learned anything in this process is that, and I knew this beforehand, but I mean, I've really seen it, is that economic development takes many, many faces based upon community. And so that's why I'll reference the pool again in Roland. Of course, that's an economic development activity. That might get someone to buy a house in Roland or build a house in Roland or make an investment in that community. And so we want to continue to create those opportunities so that we give people reasons to say yes to all of our communities. And that's really probably our biggest focus, folks, every morning when we come to the office is how do we get people to come to Story County? Yeah, we always want job creation, but at one level or another, we think there's always going to be pretty significant, meaningful capital investment in job creation here in Story County. The challenge is how do we get the people, no matter what their background is, no matter where they're from or what choices they make after hours, if they've got skills and they've got competencies to help our business community grow and our communities grow and be vibrant, then we want everybody here.
Absolutely. So final thought from me, and I just had you address this, and then we'll see if Laura and Marty have any questions or comments. But I absolutely believe and have believed for several months now that Story County has positioned itself for some paradigm-altering transformation economically over the next half dozen to 10 years. You look at where everything is headed in terms of biorenewables and all the support that goes along with that. You look at how Iowa State University and the research park is growing and prepared to go. I want my two partners to hear from your perspective what the potential is over this next half dozen to 10 years that we're looking at right now.
Well, I think we're in a really good spot. And I say that out of what you've already said because the research park continues to expand. Prairie View Industrial Center is a new opportunity for sure, it's for Ames, but it's going to be a job center. We've got good infrastructure in Story City. We've got good infrastructure in Huxley. We've got good infrastructure around the county, and there's plenty of opportunities there. And at the end of the day, if we can continue to attract people, we're going to continue to see significant investment. Now, we had a company in town a month ago that was looking at Prairie View. It probably didn't make a whole lot of sense for us to be at the table, but they wanted to talk to us. But it was a good chance for our team to really sell hard on why this is a really, really cool place and vibrant place to do business and attract people. And so as we move forward, I think we will continue to see significant opportunities for capital investment. We'll see significant opportunities for employment. You might say, well, Dan, with 2% unemployment, how is that possible? Well, here's how it's possible. We're one of the few counties in Iowa that's growing. No, we're not growing by leaps and bounds by any stretch, but we are growing. And at the same time, we've got a little bit of a false sense of security that every year, between 6,000 and 7,000 students graduate from Iowa State University and are looking for that first employment opportunity. And so the purpose of the internship program is to catch them before they get to Interstate 35 and say, if you want to stay, there are meaningful employment opportunities here. If you don't, we've all been there. We've all gone off. But you know what? Think of us when you're looking for that next opportunity when you turn 30 years old or whatever it might be. Because at one level or another, there will always be meaningful employment opportunities here. So what we need to continue to do is make all of our communities vibrant so that there are places where people can say yes. They say, hey, I don't want to live in a big town like Ames. I want to live somewhere else. Or I want to live closer to Des Moines because my spouse works there. Mm-hmm. Well, then live in Huxley or live in Cambridge, whatever it might be. And so we should be really bullish on our future because, I'm going to land the plane here, because right now, we're pretty well aligned. You know, if a goofy opportunity came for a hard project, I wouldn't be bashful to come here and say, is there any way the Board of Supervisors can help us? Or can you help the mayor? Or can you help this community? Or whatever that community might be. And that's how today is different than maybe it was 10 or 20 years ago, is that I get a sense that we're all in this together. And a lot of that has been as a result of the meaningful work that's being done and the meaningful investment that's occurring across the county. So it isn't just Ames that's winning opportunities right now. It's all of our communities are seeing benefit and gain and value from that process, not just from our efforts, but from collective efforts of you folks, our organization, and the people that are investing their dollars in those communities.
Absolutely. And as I said last thing, and I clearly didn't mean it because you said something that made me think of something else, in addition to keeping more of our graduating students in Story County and drawing people to live in Story County, we need to recognize that we're a net importer of people every single day. Last time I saw the number a couple years ago, we were importing 6,000 more people to Story County for the workday than we're leaving. We need to continue to grow that opportunity. I mean, we would rather live in Huxley, but if you live in Ankeny, that's okay. Come work in Story County. If you live in Boone, come on, work in Story County. Marshalltown, you're over there in a month or so. Come on to Story County and work, and let's make sure that we have the expertise and workforce necessary to be able to continue to drive that investment. And you guys are doing a great job with that. Thanks. Questions for Dan?
I'm on the NEDC, and I have to tell you, it was a when I joined it, it was a we versus you. And we're now at the time where we can't get enough exposure in Ames with Ames to share the collective message that your organization has done. John Hall does a wonderful he that provides leadership in a way I didn't think that, you know, a young man like that can provide. Well, it's never on the agenda. Part of the meeting always turns to the fact, thank God we got AEDC with us now. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I remember the conversation just, you know, by reading it in the paper, hearing it by people that had pushed back in regards to, does the county really want to provide public dollars to apportion a position to bring this on? I would tell you, after 2+ years of doing this, I wouldn't know where we would be if we hadn't. I would hate to have to start it at this late date to bring into being what I suspect will come to be and not that far off this in the future if we didn't have our commitment to provide your organization to stand it up to work in behalf of the county. So we're going to have one of those stories here later today. Brenda, I spent a lot of time with, and one of the things that strikes me is she'll never tell you how much work she put into bringing that Larson Drilling building into being. Yeah, it was no small lift, and thank you. Collins is going to talk to us here in a little bit. I go into these communities, you know, with Lawrence, you go to these meetings too at night, and she's at the table, she's the resource, she's the base, she's the phone number, she does it. Dustin, that'll be your story here too, I hope, coming up, but thank you, Dan. I'm glad that the Story County does it. I look forward to continuing to do that.
Outstanding. Lawrence, anything?
I think lessons said, I agree with it, so I think we'll just move on. Thank you, Dan, and thank you to all your staff. How's that?
Thank you. My final parting comment would be that the resources that you invest in our organization give us the ability to hire really good people. And that's the difference. Yeah, and that's why you see more collaboration, because it's hard. It's hard to hire really good people. My first job at college is in a small county in North Iowa, and it's hard to bring in someone there. And so what we've been able to do is by aligning forces and dollars and resources, we've got really competent people like Brenda and Dustin sitting here this morning that are really doing exceptional work. So thanks for all the kind words. Thanks for your ongoing support. And never hesitate, don't be bashful, never hesitate to contact us if we can be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. Next, consideration of minutes from August 7th.
Move as presented.
Okay. Motion to second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda. Let's pull number one for discussion, brief discussion. But if there's a motion that...
We move the consent agenda, less I-1 as presented.
Second.
Motion in the second. Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Number one. Mike, I don't know if you need to come up. It was just either miss addition. So it's really $4,998.24. Our original agenda went out at $4,098.24. So just wanted to note that. If there's no questions, I take a motion to approve number one.
I would move that we approve number one as presented in the document.
Second.
Motion and second. Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. All right, that gets us down to public hearing items. Second consideration of Ordinance 274, renaming a portion of Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way. Jerry, no reason to go through much. Any comments?
I don't really have any. It's just the 4-mile stretch of Lincoln Highway, changing the name from Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way, quarter mile west of Potter, which is 590th Avenue. The City of Ames City Council approved it June 19th. From I-35 to Potter Avenue.
Any thoughts on whether we need a third reading or not?
We haven't heard from anybody, so I would think that we'd be good
to
proceed with waiving the third reading.
Questions or comments before we open the public hearing?
None.
All right, let's open the public hearing on Ordinance 274 and ask if there is anybody who would like to address the renaming of Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way in the portion that is now in the city of Ames. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for potential action, noting that you may move that we waive the third reading and make this our final reading if you so choose.
I move second consideration of Ordinance 274, waiving third reading for renaming a portion of Lincoln Highway to East Lincoln Way as presented.
I second.
Motion and a second, waiving third reading so that it would make this ordinance into effect today. Further conversation?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 274 passes, and that is the final reading.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of Resolution 1911 to enter into a purchase contract, and this one is Carroll Prairie. Mike, come on up. Talk to us about this one.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So as you know, there have been this property that you've been working on for a number of years fundraising efforts. Unique piece of property that was offered at a significant bargain sale from the landowner, and it is significant for conservation for a few reasons. One, it really hasn't been developed. It has many areas of remnant native prairie, so native landscape hasn't been touched over the years. And so those are few and far between. It has been grazed over the years, but to no real ill effect. And the folks that have been grazing it have done it in a very sensitive manner to the landscape. So it's a wonderful property. West Indian Creek runs through it. It is north of Nevada, and we just see it as a nice opportunity to conserve a little bit of additional natural area in the county. Having said that, we entered into an agreement, if you will, relationship with Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, as we do on many land acquisition projects. They purchased the property up front and gave us time to do the fundraising effort then to pay them back. So, short story is the fundraising effort came up with almost 80% of the funds for this project. Very small piece that comes from the county, $10,000 to be exact. So it's the Conservation Board recommended last night that approve the purchase order or the purchase agreement and recommends that the supervisors do the same.
Yeah, so I mean, so let's just talk this through. First of all, it's 50 acres for $80,000, so that is truly under market for an acre of ground. It's not ground that we're having to necessarily restore, although we would like to see improvement, but it's something that has existed in a basic state that we want. And then we had unbelievable success with the private fundraising. So asking the people of Story County to contribute $10,000 toward an 80-acre jewel along West Indian Creek, I think is a reasonable request. Questions before we open the public hearing?
None. This is out by me. I looked at this thing for a lot of time. Conversation fell out of a township trustee. That, you know, Eric is really good, Amy's really good, and you were very good about talking about remnant prairie. And by looking at that, how can you tell? I mean, this is an aside to the issue at hand, but when you look at some place and you say, oh, that's remnant prairie, how do you know that?
People that are better at identifying plants than I am.
Oh, okay, that's what it comes down to.
Go there and identify all of the different native plants. And some native plants have more of a tolerance to disturbance than others. And those that don't have a high tolerance, if you will, if those plants are present, and if there's essentially a diversity of native plants that are there, including those sensitive ones, then we know that there really hasn't been any human touch on that landscape.
Well, that makes it special by itself, then.
Laura, anything before we open the public hearing?
No.
Okay. We'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address Resolution 1911, which is purchase agreement for Carroll Prairie. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close public hearing. I'll turn to the board for potential action.
I would move Resolution 19-11 to enter into a purchase agreement for the purchase of property locally known as Parcel D with the rest of the legal to be as presented.
Second. Motion and a second.
For the amount of $80,000.
Motion and a second, amount of $80,000 for the parcel that we're discussing. And I'll just note one more time for the record, while the purchase price is $80,000, we're talking about $10,000 of taxpayer money going toward this purchase price. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye. That was easy.
We bought Carroll Prairie. Next one, talking about Jordan Wildlife and consideration of Resolution 1913, entering a purchase agreement known as Parcel C, and I won't read the rest of the description. Might take us through this one. This one is even a more dramatic example of how we can leverage funds.
Yeah, we thought Carroll was an exciting story. This one is much more so, frankly. Again, we worked, had a partnership with the Natural Heritage Foundation to move forward with this. This project's was started just months before the Carroll Prairie project. And I remember a phone conversation I had with the director of the Natural Heritage Foundation, and we chatted about the Carroll project, and we were just embarking on the Jordan project. And I said, you know, I don't know if I want to bite off another project right now. So we are interested in Carroll, but that Jordan is our focus. And so, you know, Natural Heritage Foundation and ourselves, I guess, move forward with that confidence that we can accomplish both. And so it was nice to, it's always nice to partner with them. The Jordan piece is 175 acres south of Ames along the Skunk River. And it's a property that has both floodplain, it has old river meanders in it, because it was the river used to run right through the middle of it, and when the river was channelized, it was shifted off to the west side of the property. All the old river channels and meanders, a significant number of those are still evident on the landscape there. So we saw that as both an incredible opportunity to protect some floodplain, do some water quality benefits, do some riparian restorations, provide another wonderful wildlife area, hunting area, wildlife viewing area, etc., and do a number of things and accomplish another number of other goals at the same time. Beautiful piece of property. We said there's a lot of potential here for diverse landscapes, different habitats, etc., a lot of overarching goals. To make a long story short, we were able to acquire significant grant funding for this project. And so this is all said and done, approximately an $880,000 project, including acquisition and restoration. We received, the project received the largest EQIP grant that was given out, or that we think has been given out in the state. And so that's a NRCS, that's federal grant project. And so that went toward restoration of the property. Acquisition was helped by a federal grant, another federal grant we received in addition to a state grant that we received from hunting license fees, if you will. So we received those grants. They covered a large portion of this. We had a significant private fundraising effort, and all said and done, out of that project, what we're asking for today is $5,000 to come forward through the taxpayers of Story County to support this project. And then roughly $5,200 from the Energy Transfer Fund That completes the project now with all of the other fundraising. So, incredible project, a number of different groups on board with it, from Pheasants Forever, Outdoor Alliance, Astoria County, Big Blue Stem Audubon, and just several organizations that are behind it because they see the significance of this and the potential for just overall community betterment for it. So, wonderful project. Again, thanks to family, again, for a bargain sale on this property as well. And those are just incredible. Those bargain sale mechanisms are an incredible mechanism that allows the families to, you know, support conservation efforts, and at the same time maximizes their tax benefits for the property sale. So that's a wonderful tool that's in our toolkit, if you will, for land acquisitions. So this is a great project. Conservation Board has been very supportive of it, and last night recommended that the Board of Supervisors approve this purchase agreement.
Outstanding. Questions for Mike before we open the public hearing?
Long process. Congratulations on selling together all the funding streams, and a $5,000 ask that is very modest. So,
well, yeah, it's beyond very. It's unbelievable. It is. I mean, so let's just be clear. What happened here? 175 acres. Really prime kind of conservation ground that needed some restoration, right? So $550,000 purchase price for the 175 acres, another $330,000 put into the restoration of that 175 acres. So $880,000 total price to do this, and we're asking the people of Story County to contribute $5,000 taxpayer dollars to make it happen.
And that's a walk back from the $10,000 we put through the budget process. So we actually keep doing this much.
A spectacular demonstration of what can be accomplished when we have great people working to get it done. Both these properties that we talked about belong with conservation. One, because it is native remnant prairie, and the other one because of where it sits on the floodplain with all the old meanders and the potential of what that ground can be and how it's going to be utilized for the public. You talked about the relationships with the different hunting groups and nature groups, and I just think it's a really, really good project.
Don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to open the public hearing.
Last question. You talked about this on the Carroll Prairie too, about bank restoration. What does that mean? What will we see there when you start doing that?
What will we do at Jordan?
Well, either on a bank restoration, you had said, may have mentioned that part of what the acquisition, what you wanted to see to do going forward.
So we've had some early conversation with a couple groups about doing some restoration along the banks at Jordan on the Stump River. There's one bank in particular that really needs some stabilization. That has not been funded yet. But we've got some feelers out with some different organizations. There's plenty of potential out there for doing some of that work. Rivers, as you know, rivers like to meander, and that's what they do. And so this river was once straight as an arrow along the west side of that property, and now this property owns real estate on both sides of the river. So that tells you it's meandered, and it's going to continue to meander. And so there's a couple areas that we'd like to do some stabilization projects on. Some of those can be as simple as tree plantings or maybe some shrub plantings. In other areas, we might have to employ some of the methods that we're using at Tedesco for stabilization. But there is some need to do some work there.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Resolution 19-13, Purchase Agreement for Jordan Acres. Seeing no one moving the microphone, I'll close the public hearing. Turn to the board for action.
I move Resolution 19-13 to enter the purchase agreement for the property known as Jordan Acres, Parcel C, for the dollar value of $5,000. County contribution.
Yeah, but the purchase price is $550. Yep. So the total purchase price that we're moving on today is $550,000.
I second.
Motion and a second. Marty's 100% right. It is 5,000 tax dollars that we'll put into this. Further discussion?
Yeah.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Mike, thanks.
The only thing I would add to that is we do have an open house schedule, a dedication schedule for next Friday, the 24th, at 6 o'clock. The program starts 4 o'clock. You can arrive. Speaking at 6.
And people can walk around in the area first, correct? But the actual dedication is going to be near the road?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Did you send an invite out just to, you know, put that all into an email and send that, please?
Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Okay, moves us on to additional items, discussion consideration of a memo of understanding between the City of Ames and Story County in regard to the Justice Assistant Grant, JAG program. Oh, Connie's going to speak to it for us. Outstanding.
Unfortunately, you got stuck with me.
Oh, don't ever
speak that. So since we have the jail, we've got to be part of this application, right?
Yes, this isn't the first year that we have done this. The Ames Police Department has done this application or done this grant. But this particular grant of the jail has to have us included in it. And what they want to do, they're asking for $11,334. And that money they would like to put towards to improve the security and access to the local public safety network, which Kyle from IT is here. If you need more information on that, that would be over my head. But the funds can be used towards training, towards supplies, towards anything, and because this is security with all the agencies, that's what they would like to put this.
Mm-hmm. And the grant itself is the $11,000 in odd money. It's not coming from us. We just need to be the co-requesters for it.
Okay. And there is no match, so we would not have to put any money towards it. Because sometimes the JAG, you have to match a certain amount. This would not have a match.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm overstating this, Connie, but if I am, just tell me. This is an Ames grant. This money will go to Ames. It'll be for Ames to use. It'll benefit potentially all law enforcement. But it's Ames grant. We simply need to be part of it since we run the jail. It's something we've done in the past. And unless there's any questions, we'll just move on. All right, so then I would look for a motion.
I move that we approve the memorandum of understanding by and between the City of Ames and Story County for the Justice Assistant Grant Program.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks, Connie.
Thank you. Yeah.
Next is consideration of the countywide watershed assessments. So a month or so ago, we had a joint meeting between the Board of Supervisors, Planning and Zoning Commission, and Conservation Board to receive and re-discuss this report. And now it gets to come to us in our capacity to accept the report as the Board of Supervisors. We've got Pat Conrad and Leanne Harder to talk us through it today.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So Leanne gets the little presentation pulled up. I'd like to, again, thank you for the opportunity to work with you guys. I think that between your vision and, you know, the leadership provided by Leanne and Mike, we developed a pretty exciting watershed assessment product for you. Really does kind of put you in a leadership position as far as a county looking at watershed issues, you know, not strictly a watershed organization, but being it done on a countywide basis is kind of a unique approach. And I think, again, together, kind of working through what would be in this and what we would cover, I think we really did come up with a cool tool for you guys.
Have you seen anything like this from another county or even from any entity dealing with multiple watersheds?
You know, there are some. No, it typically is done on a watershed basis. There are some counties in Minnesota are required to do watershed planning or water resource planning. But it is a little different than this. As far as just a general overall watershed look at what our resources are, how do we do business, how in the way we do business can affect water quality, this is fairly unique, I'd say.
Okay.
So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to really briefly run through the contents of the report. You know, many of you had the very long, detailed overview going through page by page, it felt like. I'm just going to hit on some of the highlights of what is in it. To basically start out with a summary of what are your water resources, what is that kind of that stream network. Look into some of the characteristics of the watershed that affect water quality. Look at a little bit of watershed prioritization, you know, which are the more important resources to residents of the county, which streams are used more regularly than others. And then, you know, a series of recommendations for how do we get water quality improvements in our different land use types, if you will, so from agricultural to urban areas. And then, like I mentioned, we did, the project somewhat evolved into a review of how you guys do business in the county and what kind of recommendations can we make to tighten up those types of things. So with that, maybe I'll just kind of walk through a little bit and give you a flavor of what's in the report. So the water resource summary basically goes into, you know, what are the expectations for use of the streams within the county, and then which of the streams within the county aren't meeting those designated uses? So where do we have impaired waters? Where do we have concentrations of nutrients that are too high? Where do we have streams that have high bacteria counts where, you know, there's maybe recreation is somewhat impaired for those? So we walk through that, discussion of the priority streams, the riparian areas adjacent to the streams, so kind of an assessment of how wide of a buffer do we have around these streams? How many areas do we have where there's, you know, maybe row crop agriculture right up against a stream, or there's urban development pressures right against the stream? You know, kind of get a sense of what the quality is of that riparian area. And then again, a discussion finally of the lakes and the limited wetlands that remain in the watershed. The watershed assessment, you know, we walk through, you know, basically the kind of the characteristics of the watershed itself with that watershed network, you know, that we looked at, coming down from the very high level. You know, the majority of the area drains through the Skunk River, but there's some other because the county is somewhat unique in that it hits some of these other large drainage ways. So you can see the other types of things that we looked at, land cover, where do we have environmentally sensitive areas, so areas that are, you know, prioritized for purchase like you just did, how does topography, climate, soils, groundwater, how do all of these things impact our surface waters. Finally, we did a pollutant source assessment where we specifically looked at land use and all these different characteristics in terms of how much phosphorus, nitrogen, and sediment are being produced to run off into our streams, as well as bacteria. Kind of put that together as a way of identifying hotspots throughout the watershed where, you know, these are maybe areas we should focus on, or maybe areas where we're getting higher loads of these nutrients than other areas. And then finally, we did an inventory of the existing conservation practices within the watershed. So the DNR has put together an inventory that identifies where different conservation practices are already located on the landscape. So here's a map, you know, of what we call, refer to as hotspot maps. This one is for suspended solids. So these are areas that generate, because of their characteristics, their land use, their topography, their soils, these are areas that generate higher loads of suspended solids than other areas. Just kind of give you a flavor. There's a series of maps for the other pollutants as well in the report. So then a major focus was the identification of protection areas and restoration areas, and I'll hopefully be showing you a web page, a story map that we developed for you that you're now hosting on your web page that kind of goes in very detailed look at these protection areas and restoration areas. And again, for the protection areas, that would be the areas adjacent to the stream, wetland areas, and source water protection areas. So we've identified all the areas where we have source water issues to the local drinking water wells. For restoration areas, you know, we look at restorable wetlands, de-impaired lakes and streams, degraded stream buffers, And then some of the plant communities, if you will, like the native prairies and those types of things. And then we've done an assessment to identify where do we have priority eroded stream banks. And that was a fairly detailed analysis because, throughout the county, we have quite a bit of stream bank erosion. So we went through a process of kind of prioritizing where we have the worst stream bank erosion, and then also where does that intersect where there's maybe some infrastructure, a home, a bridge, a roadway. Where is that erosion going to potentially cause problems in the future, and kind of flag those as the highest priority stream bank erosion areas that to be addressed in the future. We then developed a fairly significant portion of the project was the identification of agricultural conservation practices. So we used a tool called the Agricultural Conservation Practices Framework, or ACPF, also commonly referred to as the Palmer tools that were developed here in Ames. That is a tool that allows us to find where on the landscape are different conservation practices appropriate. So where does the grass waterway go? Where do we have opportunities for nutrient removal wetlands, et cetera, et cetera. So we ran those tools and kind of developed a game plan, if you will, for each of the HUC 12 sub-watersheds within the county of saying, here's where there are potential for the different conservation practices on the landscape, and here's kind of a menu or a scenario, if you will, of how you could potentially get to future reduction in those nutrient loads as a result of those practices. So there's a lot of information. We also have another story map tool that I'm hopefully going to demonstrate today that shows the output of that analysis. This alone puts you in a very, very unique spot with very few others. These ACPF tools have been run for or are being run for most of the watersheds that are in the HUD grant. If you're familiar with the HUD grant project, the Watershed Approach project for the state. So there's some of the watersheds are getting this for all of their HUC 12s, but not all of them. So this actually provides you with a very unique, very powerful tool for identifying where conservation practices can go on the landscape. Finally, in addition to that, we did some recommendations for how to address stormwater management in the urban settings and the developing settings, and then finally some approaches specific to bacteria. And so those are all outlined in the report. I think I addressed the eroded stream banks, but this gives you kind of an idea of that prioritization and really kind of pinpointing where are there specific locations in the watershed where we have that kind of that intersection of stream bank and potential infrastructure damage in the future. As far as recommendations, we've got, as I mentioned, we had a series of recommendations for addressing water quality and flooding, but then just basic recommendations as far as a system to do monitoring into the future. Monitoring is a very important tool where we can compare the health of one stream to another and all the streams throughout the county, which is a really important component to watershed management. We want to see what's going on in our resources. Can we detect any trends in our resources? And should we prioritize an area, one area against another because of the character of that water? Finally, a handful of reviews that we did along with county staff to review some of your ordinances, review your role as drainage district trustees, the county road authority, particularly as it deals with stream crossings, just kind of the things that you guys do as general operations and kind of looking at it through the lens of water quality and opportunity, if you will. So if you're going through and you're redoing the roadway you have to update the stream crossing, well, let's do that in the most beneficial way for that stream, and let's make some recommendations for maybe getting some water quality treatment in any kind of road improvement project. So we look at these kind of things as an opportunity for improving functionality, getting water quality improvement projects in place. Finally, a model stormwater ordinance we developed that can be adopted by any of the smaller communities within the county, which, you know, I think is important. You saw earlier today with the presentation of the kind of the development that's occurring throughout the county, and those are opportunities to make sure that, you know, we aren't making things worse in terms of water quantity or flooding in those communities, and that we can maybe implement some water quality improvement practices when we do those redevelopments. So the online resources you can see here, I did a screenshot, and I think Leanne may have done hyperlinks here to bring to the actual web page. And if everything is working well, we can demonstrate how these work. But again, it's on your watershed management page of your website, and the tools basically allow you to just go in. As we zoom down into the county, we can see that's where the detail starts to show up. Maybe we just have to do it. Yeah, okay. So I'll let you drive, maybe. But as we zoom in, if we've got a good, zoom in, if we've got a good connection, the information will start to display of like the restoration and protection areas. And it's possible that we don't have a good enough, a fast enough connection for the information to draw. But the tools are there. The one tool, like I say, shows all the areas that are suitable for protection and restoration. And then the other tool allows us to go in and see where are those possible agricultural conservation practices. So you can see the example on the left are the restoration and protection areas, whereas on the right, those are the conservation practices. So basically what you're seeing in that case is you're seeing areas where there's sedimentation ponds or denitrifying wetlands, bioreactors, all of these kinds of practices are.
Yeah, so Laura Smarty, I don't know if you had a chance to go on, but it is really, really cool to just kind of zoom in on a stream. And what I found myself doing was kind of following a taking a stream called West Indian Creek and just kind of following it downstream to see all the different practices that would be appropriate in different areas.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's really, it's a very powerful tool. So as far as next steps, I think that Leanne and Mike have some ideas for how to, you know, once this is hopefully accepted, how to kind of incorporate it into the county planning through amending the comp plan and developing the implementation matrix. You know, you have some recommendations in there for how to review and update some of the county controls. I think we need to set some priorities. What is it you want to do on an annual basis? What, you know, I think those are the discussions that need to come next. You know, I think we've identified some priority areas, some things that are maybe of more concern than others, things that to me kind of rise up to the, you know, what I would consider low hanging fruit of watershed management. So that would be the kind of the riparian buffers, livestock exclusions, those types of things, before we get into any of the major conservation kind of practices. So, kind of laid that out and for you guys, and I think this gives you this kind of overall roadmap, and then it's a matter of kind of how do we incorporate this and how do we get this into your annual operations.
Perfect. So, yeah, so I think before us today, Board, we have two items. First, we need to go ahead and receive and accept this watershed assessment. Secondly, we need to have a discussion about exactly what Pat's talking about, what our next steps look like. And so let's deal with those individually. So the first thing I would ask is questions or comments on the countywide watershed assessment as produced by EOR.
I was pleased with the detail and how it was presented. It was, I felt logical. I felt that I knew much more about anything that we had data on. this is not your fault that we had insufficient information for some of our water, for some of our creeks, et cetera, for you not to be able to carry out all the way down about the assessment. But you just know that there's insufficient data and you went on. So I think it's a very good tool that if we want to look at implementing some of these, and I like it. So thank you very much for it.
Yep. Marty, anything?
Several things, you don't have any. I mean, you're going to need some cooperation with some landowners. That will be paramount in the sense that I'm sure, knowing a few of them, that they're going to sit there and say, what's this going to cost me? And I think that you'll probably have some people that will be more inclined to lean forward as back. And I that's a conversation on a bigger basis, because I have not looked at what you just did to get down to the level that I think I can probably find a few of these places that are egregious offenders as far as bank contributors to the phosphorus levels and whatnot. I see some fields contributing in a way that you have practices and tillage that doesn't lend itself to soil adherence. But on the monitoring side, I guess I would, you know, while we have you here, how, you know, because you see it, I read the Farm Bureau spokesman every Wednesday, and you see that being something that they're suggesting be done in places to, you don't know what you don't know until you measure it. And I guess on a placement basis, are there any guiding principles, or you say you should probably want one of these here if you suspect that?
Mm-hmm.
So sure. I got some blanks there. Can you help me fill in blanks?
Yeah, and monitoring is, you know, monitoring is a really complex, you know, topic, if you will. It all depends on what your objective is in your monitoring, and that can be from as large a scale as monitoring South Skunk Creek or South Skunk River for long-term trend analysis. We can do monitoring at the edge of a field to see, okay, what are the nitrate levels this spring? You know, so it all depends on what your objectives are. We sort of propose a tiered approach where it'd be nice to get some baseline measurements on all the streams within the you know, particularly the priority streams. So let's go out several times this summer during the growing season and take grab samples of all the streams so we have some sort of database to compare them to each other. If we want to do information like, is this a particular hot spot, then that's a different type of monitoring. That might be going and installing equipment in a tile discharge where we're measuring discharge as well as concentration, so we get a real good sense of what kind of loads are coming off a particular area. So I mean, it really kind of depends on what your objectives are, and I think we laid that out a little bit in the report as part as in terms of those different tiers of monitoring.
Yeah. I think it's a great conversation, and it's not a conversation we're going to get to the end of, or really even the beginning of today. Right? What's important for us today is twofold. One, let's go ahead and acknowledge and accept this tool that's been produced for us. But then we have to fully recognize that just like any tool, if we stick it on the shelf and let it gather dust, it's not going to do anything. So we need to start thinking about how we're going to regularly pull this thing out and utilize it. But we're not going to necessarily get to the answers anytime in the near future. We're going to start to have the answers of how we're going to get the answers as we go. So the first thing I would ask is there anything else that we need to talk about before we accept this report?
I just have a question about the scope of services still available now that you've issued your report. So as we move forward in our discussions, are you still, have we retained you to help look at if we want to implement some of these monitoring, or if we want to go in, as I noted on some of the creeks earlier, we didn't have data of the same depths, right? Is that covered under now still the same grant, or would that be separate?
That would be separate.
Yeah. This brings us today's action, assuming we aren't sending this back for some kind of revision, when we receive this, that brings us to the end of the initial contract.
And obviously we would love to continue.
Yeah. Minnesota is clearly leading on this in regards to how they treat their
their water, in the sense that, and this is a monitoring question again, we have many opportunities to do that. It's going to come at an expense. What, do you give me any guidance on what Minnesota, how they fund it? I mean, is that done through a drainage district assessment? Is that done through public tax dollars? Is that something, where does the dollars come to do all that? Because we're going to sit there and say, all right, we need to know more. We have a great template. I agree with Rick. This should never be treated as a dusty document. It should be thumb worn from being pages having turned. How do we pay for it? Where is the direction other people are doing?
Right. So the example in Minnesota would be the watershed district. So the watershed districts in Minnesota are a special taxing district. They're set up somewhat like an independent school district where they cross county boundaries. They can cross, some of them are as large as 20 counties. Some of them are only a handful of counties. But it's a tax district set up on a watershed basis. And those entities have they have taxation authority, but then they also have the ability to set regulations. The regulations that they set typically only deal with development. They're still not regulating or having controls over the agricultural community, but they at least have the taxation authority to go through and get a pool of money available to do projects. There's also state money available through the sales tax initiative that was passed several years ago. And so the state has quite a bit of grant money available for the large projects. Again, you're still working with this concept of in the agricultural community of finding willing landowners that are interested in putting conservation practices on the ground. And that is always going to be a limitation. You know, I think as a county, you have somewhat of an ability to identify poor performing areas. You know, you can go out and say, hey, this is not right. You need to do something here. There's a difference between that and like forcing folks to do things. But I think that's where you lie in your role in watershed management.
Well, that's some direction that gives me some hope, because once again, to implement a change is going to take some study, and the study will be not free. So I just want to know what others are doing to give me an idea on a going forward basis where I would look and possibly model some potential legislation. Thank you.
Anything else before we consider and receive the assessment? If not, I'd take a motion to thank EOR and Pat for his work and officially accept the assessment.
I move that we accept the assessment and extend our appreciation to EOR and to also Leanne Harder, who worked with you very much on this, and Mike Cox, I believe, helped on this,
right.
And other employees who weighed in. So thank you so much.
Second. Motion and a second, and you're right, Laura, the list is long.
Yeah, I realize that.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't also acknowledge an external component. I think Prairie Rivers of Iowa was reasonably helpful.
Absolutely.
As you worked through this.
Absolutely.
Any further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All right, now let's spend 5 minutes talking about what our initial next step is. My suggestion is that we form a little informal staff group between now and, I would say, December. Take a look at this report and possible next steps. And I say possible next steps because next steps are going to be determined by the Board of Supervisors. The reason I picked December as the date is that gives us the ability to work any of those things into our budget discussions as we move into FY20. And my suggestion for that informal work group just to analyze this and what our next steps are would be Leanne, Mike Cox, Jerry Moore, and I'm tempted to say Darren Moon, but I don't want to. I think I would ask that Deb Shildroff be part of that group instead of Darren Moon, even though a lot of this is going to spill over, or some of it will spill over into secondary roads.
What would your reasoning be in not having Darren
because Darren has a completely full plate and will between now and December. Not that everybody else doesn't have a completely full plate. But the work that Darren's got going right now, and some of his staffing issues with some of his people out on leave and things like that, I think just make that a little problematic.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And so if we were willing to ask that group to get together regularly between now and December, I think we're looking kind of on two tracks, and that is potential regulations and policies that we might want to look at sooner rather than later, and the second one would be practices and monitoring that we would want to look at. I think Marty brings up a great point. The low-hanging fruit in terms of any projects is going to be based on willing landowners, right? So there's two schools of thought for how you go. It is you pick a stream or a section of a stream, and you go in and you try to take care of that, much like what we did in Tedesco, right? Where we focused energy and dollars on one section of one stream and really tried to bring it back. I tend to think that's kind of unrealistic simply because the county doesn't own pieces of property like that, and so you're going to be working with landowners. But we ask staff to really review those kind of things and give the board options of what we're going to want to look at in calendar year 19 and what we're going to look at budgetarily for fiscal year 20 to try to move this thing down the field.
Any review or suggestions that the staff comes up with, I'd like to have some estimates of costs associated with a particular plan of action. Yes, that's important for us. And then I think I agree with you about being able to look at to say, hey, we can just put these on landowners is not going to work. If we can find some volunteers for some projects, that's great. But I do agree that we're going to need some more data or monitoring. We're going to need some a better plan to lay out. I remember the initial meetings of the Fall Creek watershed. That there was a lot of confusion and a lot of hesitation on landowners. So
that was the meeting. So Paul too talked regularly about that was the meet, and we sat through some master matrix discussions. We sat through some tough discussions. He said that was far away the toughest discussion. The initial squawk. Did you go up with him for that one, Leanne?
Is that the one up in Stanford?
Up in Stanford. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Paul said that was far and away the toughest.
Well, you let it.
Yeah. And people convinced that this was some kind of ploy by government to force a reservoir or to force practices on their property. The other thing that I would say is if we are going to ask these employees to meet regularly to give us recommendations, one of the first things that better be discussed is where exactly does this reside? You could make a case that it's a special project. You could make a case that it's conservation. You could make a case that we need to have a contract with some kind of outside entity, much like Prairie Rivers does with our two watershed authorities. You could make any of those cases. We better start to have that conversation of where this resides, because if we don't specifically say where it resides, it effectively resides nowhere.
Correct. Correct. Okay, so internal versus external. I would say that from an external perspective, bringing somebody who's done, whether it's Prairie Rivers or EOR or anybody from external, they have a lot of experience. There's a cost involved with that. And I read go through this report, and just the ideas that pop to my mind, I just read through my highlights from June again, and this is a time-intensive undertaking, I think. So I think the cost allocation for external, we need to get a quote back before we can make that.
And all on that, yeah.
I'm just working through.
Absolutely.
So internally, either way, we're going to expend the turtle time resources for people who are already strapped on this. And as I look at this, I'm going to turn out to Jerry, Deb, and Leanne, who are here, and Mike. Here. So what do you think, as a group like this, to go ahead and really take a look at some of these strategies, even if you start with the recommendations? Are you looking at being once a week, once every other week?
Well, this is the first day that they've heard of it, so I would imagine they haven't...
Well, Mike and I have been planning ahead. We have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow to start talking about how do we go forward from here. And coincidentally, tomorrow as well, essentially the same parties, except Deb can't be there and Darren will be there. We're going to be starting talking about amending the C2C plan and incorporating this into it. I don't know if it's a biweekly meeting. I mean, I think those are details that Mike and I continue our meeting tomorrow and start.
Yeah, and so I'm not trying to suggest that the board needs to mandate how often you meet.
No, I
think
I understand.
What we'd like to do is, absolutely, I think you're right.
I want to put it with.
I think what we need to do is we need to make a request that by a date, and I'm calling it sometime in early December, that this group work through some recommendations for the board, or options, not even recommendations necessarily, just options. We could either do this or we could do that. And so there were six people in my mind that I think you could easily make a case that they belong on this group, and that is, we talked about them, except for Margaret. Leanne, Mike, Jerry, Deb, Darren, and Margaret James are the six, and I narrowed it down to the four, because I think it's most applicable to Leanne, Mike, and Jerry, and I'm asking Deb to do it because of her role with our external and the fact that I'm trying to leave Darren out of this
room. Right, so Deb can go to Darren as needed for specific advice. Okay. So I think Leanne, I look at it as a special project, or I look at it, I guess in my thought, would be conservation, one of the two, with that because of previous work already in the areas. I mean, Jerry, I know that you contributed greatly to this. I just, from the development standpoint, you're going to give a lot of input, but I think overall, either conservation or Leanne with the previous special projects she's done would be the two that have the most continuity of. Okay? So there's where I'm down to two. All right? One of the two. Well, be quiet, let somebody else say it.
I think we start the conversation internally. I think it will quickly turn to the fact that it will be such a heavy lift, we will probably bring somebody on a contractual basis. We are doing this at Story County. The story you told me, Pat, was the fact that it will probably move out if we're going to do this well and large scale. It's going to involve outside of our county. We're going to have to find partnerships. But initially, I'd like to think that through the collation of this report, the information provided, we can give ourselves some sense of direction and scope. So I think that December is a great time frame. It is August. I think they can come back with us with some recommendations as to what they'd like to see done. They can keep us noticed as they have their meetings to on the takeaway, what they're going to provide, what they're discovering, what they like to have. I don't want to tie Pat down any further with my silly questions, but, you know, you did, Horace jog something in my head, and we do this all the time, and we go into the budgeting process for secondary roads in regards to building bridges, and you had said through your presentation that bridge building can be a contributor to water quality. Can you just briefly, without taking this any further, go there?
Yeah, and I think it's more of the smaller crossings where you've got where the bridge or the culvert crossing becomes a restriction, if you will. You know, so when the flow comes through, a lot of times that culvert becomes a restriction. If there's any kind of elevation change on either side of the road, that can be an impasse for fish. You know, there's a lot of in many cases there's some filling that can occur alongside of the roadway in construction of a bridge, but mostly it has to do with allowing that river or stream to continue to meander and not change its shape as it goes through a crossing. You know, you mentioned the the rivers like to meander. Well, when you box them into a crossing, that affects not only that section of the stream, but all a ways downstream. So it's basically just a way of sizing that crossing. So it's appropriate for that.
Not just sizing, but the other thing I saw you mentioned, Pat, when you presented to us out at McFarland Park is actually, and I hadn't even considered this until you presented it, but actually sinking the box of a box culvert a little further down, where instead of having a concrete floor that the water runs across, you have more of a stream. I mean, the culvert is sunk underneath basically the stream bed, and so it's just a continuation of the stream through the crossing. So, yeah, those are all things. There would be a definite financial factor in that. So I'd ask this. Leanne, Mike, Jerry, Deb, any of your schedules such that you either can't or aren't interested in serving on this internal, informal work group over the next few months? Good. Jerry, you're good? Okay, good. Mike, you're good? Leanne? Good.
And then coming back to in the work program also, and thoughts about conflicts about big projects coming up. And I'm just thinking about the Story County, the housing needs assessment. Is the Story County Economic Development Group is going to decide to take that on? I'm thinking that's probably going to rest with Leanne on that. And Mike, do you have a special big project coming on? A special one coming on that's not on your work schedule right now.
No, I mean, the biggest one coming up for us is Take the Girl.
Okay. Who's already on? Taking a look at resources here.
Yep.
Thank you, Pat. You have
Pat, good job.
That was a great presentation out of McFarland. This is a wonderful report. It gives us the opportunity to be a first to something else, and I'd like to think that we're going to use it.
Great. Super, guys. Yeah, thank you. Any objection to direction to staff for specifically those four staff members to meet and put together some options and recommendations for the board to consider in early December?
I would give you comfort and small comfort, cold comfort in this, Loris. It's a transition period. All it gives us is from today to December.
I understand. Thank you for that cold comfort.
Yeah, your concerns are worthy because the thing is they're here and they do a lot of things quietly that are not noticed before the public. But I think this is something that's now here. What do we do with it?
Right. So, Rick, because you brought up, who's gonna take responsibility? Who's the entity? Are you thinking then to have the work group before make the decision about who would be the entity to take it on?
I think the four of them. No, I think the four of them get together and figure out what their plan of action is. They know they've got a date certain in December,
okay,
and they divide up tasks. And when you're only dealing with a group of four, I think that you just trust those four to figure it out. And then I see, Loris, that we're going to have to make some really big-time allocation decisions in December.
Right.
And both financial and time constraints and being able to figure out who's actually going to take us to the next couple steps. This is just trying to figure out what those next couple steps are and how we would go about it.
It's an internal RFI.
Okay.
So I think they're advised consent. I think we still retain the ability to give direction. We will just have them do the studies portion.
Well, I have great faith in all four of them. Their abilities to work together and to make decisions.
Good. All right. There's the direction. Thanks, Pat. Thank you.
I do want to publicly thank Matt Boyk, our GIS coordinator.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What EOR did and made it all so we can host it, and there was quite a bit of work on his part to do it.
Outstanding.
And it does work.
Outstanding. Next, discussion consideration of application for a facade grant improvement for the city of Collins. And I'm not putting a dollar amount in because I understand it has changed based on the rules of our grant. Leanne, you're taking us through this?
I am. First few slides are very familiar. I won't belabor them, but just again, the purpose of facade improvement grant is to provide financial assistance to city governments. They act as the applicant working in private commercial businesses. It's a one-time reimbursement grant up to 20% or not more than $10,000 towards the total project cost. And I'll get to that shortly. That was some of the confusion. And Brett did provide a follow-up email that did clarify that they are looking at the 20%. They originally thought it was a 50%.
And is it 20% of the $18,660? Is that what we're talking about?
Of the total project.
Not of the 25. I thought the total budget was 25.
No, 20% of the 25.
20% of the 25, okay.
Of the total project cost. That's okay. What we look at. The city is required to provide matching funds equal to or greater than. Those matching funds can be direct funds or in-kind contributions as well. And the program guidelines do define the nature of in-kind contributions. However, I spoke to this, the applicants, the city with in those communities under 2,000 persons. We've had one exception that I'll show shortly. Eligible improvements are those that have to be publicly visible from the right-of-way. So, zeroing the car wash, you could see it from different parts of the right-of-way, but it wasn't necessarily just a facade improvements. So, we're talking about City of Collins. There's Main Street property, several addresses. Three property owners currently, and Judy Tiffany. Midwest Insurance still is on the books as the official owner of record for one of the buildings, and then the City of Collins owns one of the buildings. This is generally the location, and I need to remember not to use a blue square because I need a projector. The blue square is roughly the boundaries of the buildings that are involved. Again, as you can see, right along Main Street, Collins. Scope of services as defined in the application provides facade improvements for those three different buildings: painting, wall repairs, doors installation, landscaping, and signage. Total project cost is $25,510, and then 20% request is $5,102. And Collins is required to match that, but they do anticipate a contribution of upwards of a little bit over $5,500. Property owners are putting in, aside from the City of Collins as a property owner, are putting in $4,850. So this is a little bit wonky in that Collins is a property owner, but again, as the city applicant, I think we count it all as the Collins match. Just a quick snapshot of what we've done with this program so far. We started in 2015, and I've put these in the fiscal years because the board does annually budget $10,000, but a lot of times the funding doesn't actually come through in reimbursement until another fiscal year, but this is when the amounts were awarded. It won't necessarily match up with when they were allocated. City is zeroing last year, or so far this year, but in fiscal year 18. City is zeroing Story City. That is the one exception to the communities under 2,000. That was a special request the board considered, and the City of Cambridge. The prior fiscal year, Cambridge again, and then City of Slater. City of Roland is zeroing the second year of the program, and our inaugural project was with the City of Zeering in fiscal year 2015. Not including what is before you today, total project funds that have been allocated toward these are just under $30,000, $28,958, but I like the second number. The total project cost, and these are improvements that have gone directly in Main Street, is really nearing the $200,000 mark. So Matt Evans is unfortunately not here. He's exploring Hawaii, but he did create a story map. A story map, again, is a GIS application online specific for our facade grant improvement program. This is kind of a twofold. Let me see. Technology is great.
Sure.
We heard that sort of voice there.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to sign in. I would show it to you, but I'm not going to be able to. You can come visit me in the office, and I'll show it to you. But what we're doing is he's taken all the applications. The first few slides are just an overview. And I don't know if you've seen a story map, but it's using GIS and its way to visually tell a story. I did it with the capital improvements plan. We're doing it with the urban renewal area project too. I'm going to share it with the Story County Economic Development Group, hopefully, this Thursday. We did it for the first impressions that group did as well of all the communities. But it's a way to visually see the before and after too, and have all the information that so the public can understand the nature of this program, but we're hoping potential applicants can use it as well to understand the program. So, sorry that did not work. But next time.
I love that we've leveraged $28,000 into $200,000 in improvements and basically our smallest towns plus Story City. I think it's exactly what this program, Leanne, was supposed to do. Going back to the first time you and I talked about it. I'm excited now that that Collins is stepping in and wants to take advantage of it. I expect that I'm hearing rumblings that we're going to get an application from Cambridge here before long. I don't know if you've heard any of that.
I've heard some same
rumblings. But I think the application we got before us from Collins falls exactly in line with what we like to do. Are there questions, comments, or a motion?
I have no questions. I have been to multiple meetings, of course, you've gone down to. I think this is a city on the rise. We were just speaking, you know, quietly about the new car trail coming. We've had Landis come to us and do a $15 million build out, which I suspect will phase itself into something larger. I think you're going to see, you know, on the housing trust fund allocation of dollars, you're going to see homes going here. I would point to Collins and sit there and say, this is what success looks like in a small community in our county. With that, I would, if there are no objections, I would move to granting the application of the Story County Facade Improvement Grant Program for the City of Collins for, what was that?
$5,102.
$102.
I would second that.
Yeah, Collins doing a great job.
Doing a great job.
Keep it up.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome
very much. Chief.
Aye. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. $5,102.
And I have a comment. Congratulations on thinking just a little bit out of the box. Because, I mean, it's three properties. You're doing something with three properties. And with the color, the whole thought process behind this is not something that in reading the facade grant first time through would probably hit you. So congratulations.
Well, and I think she's already left, but I think we've got to give a lot of credit to Brenda Dreyer for being creative to get this through. As I understand it, she's going to ask some of her scale students to help with some signage out there to get consistent. I mean, with the health center and stuff that you got in downtown, Collins has changed over the last half dozen years. Downtown, this is going to take it to the next step. So now I hear they've got a good realtor in town too. So. Next is discussion consideration of the FY20 funding priorities for assets. So a couple weeks ago, or maybe just a week ago, Deb was before us, and we asked her to go back and work with our asset volunteers to come up with potential more specific priorities. And it looks like you've done that.
Good morning, Deb.
Yeah. Good morning. So before you is the draft document. It looks considerably different than what we have used in the past, just in terms of formatting. I did get input from those county asset volunteers that were available and on the application, so I'm going to be sharing that with this person after the fact. But all in all, they were pleased to hear that the county was looking at funding priorities, and we really kind of looked at what our categories had been and inched them up in terms of basic needs, safety and well-being, and the promoting self-sufficiency. So those are kind of the categories we came up with. We did talk about eventually moving in the direction of the three categories that are within the asset process: income, education, and health. And those are the broad categories. That's how the services are aligned within the Clear Impact Scorecard. That didn't feel like we could make that big of a jump quite yet with the information that we still need from the scorecard. So that will be forthcoming within the next few months. So We do want to continue having the overall statement that services funded by the county must be available and accessible countywide. The categories are listed right now in a prioritized order. I am certainly willing to entertain any comments and changes that the board has in reprioritizing those if you wish. But please note that the sub-bullets under each of those categories are not prioritized. So there is some flexibility there under the main heading. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board for questions or comments.
So, it looks to me like, and I appreciate us getting the priorities, 1, 2, and 3, for us to talk about and consider. But it looks to me like really what we're doing here is we're offering more clarity to not only our volunteers, but the entire asset volunteer base of what exactly we're looking for here in Soria County.
Correct.
Questions or comments?
I'm comfortable with how these are arranged, with basic needs being the first priority, and safety will being second, and self-sufficiency. We know that eventually that's where they won't need services from 1 and 2, but you need to get them to that point. So,
this looks to me like this is the logical progression of what we would want to fund.
So, thank you.
Nothing to add. You guys covered it well.
All right. Take a motion.
I would move that we adopt the funding priorities for Soria County for fiscal year 2019-20 in the asset process as presented today.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion? Deb, as always, great job.
Thank you.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes.
And that thank you to the county volunteers as well for meeting with me and giving the input. I think that, again, it's just valuable to have the volunteers.
We've got great volunteers.
Deb, we had also mentioned a week or 2 weeks ago when we did this first time, about the idea of possibly some pilot money or a different category to consider when we looked at maybe in January. What did the volunteers think about that as far as for new programs?
They were interested in learning more about it. I'll put it that way. I talked to them as I talked with the board about the new extended service request that Asset received and the dollar amount that was tied to that, and how we want to be able to use the priorities in order to provide those dollars in those areas of greatest need. And I kind of have to work that through my mind a little bit more as we go forward. Once I see the budget requests that come in from the asset agencies, we get those at the end of September. And then what I do is I bring that information to the board as we discuss the dollars that will go into the allocation process. So I'm hoping to put more of a formula in place at that point in time once we know what the requests are going to be across the board.
But now help me remember, Deb, because it feels like without formally doing just exactly what we talked about a week ago or 2 weeks ago or whenever it was, feels like we almost did this through the asset process when there was a shift in school-based mental health funding. That was a new program coming in, and we put some dollars towards specifically, I think, training in those, but we asked that those dollars not be taken from any of the growth from the other entity. So I think in essence that board talked about, let's make sure we add enough to be able to handle this but still recognize the growth. This would be just a more formal way of doing that.
Right, and just to kind of let you know, I'm hoping that maybe Deb and I can get together in the next couple of weeks to talk about what would it look like for people who follow that thing. What would it look like for people who are not in the asset process? That I've got some ideas about, as we talked about that, what if we put a few pilot dollars toward a program brought by an outside group? And then maybe that couple could come before the board to discuss when we're headed into January. You're looking at going.
I think that through, and I think. First of all, anybody can come before the board and request anything. So I'm all in on that. But my initial reaction is always, we have this unbelievably good process, the asset process, and why would we not want to steer everything toward that? Now, that said, the school-based mental health program came out of DCAT, right? It was fully funded by DCAT at first, and we really had to work hard to get it into the asset process, but we didn't ever fund it from outside the asset process.
Well, and that's why, you know, I think...
But that's what the book was.
It's to talk about, you know, where do we go on this? And I think I offered before the reasoning was because somebody doesn't qualify to get into the asset process. Is it because of the agency status or its time status or whatever? But I just want to let you guys...
Worth the conversation. Anything else for Deb?
A couple of my notes from that conversation 2 weeks ago were to look at the new and expanded services and what underserved area are they looking at providing services to, demonstrate expected impact, and then how do they best fit the priorities that you
have
today. So,
Good. Thank you.
Nothing. I appreciate the follow-up.
Thank you.
Really good. Next is IRBM quarterly report. Joe, you got to slip out in the hallway and get your show and tell item.
Yay.
I saw you carrying green stuff in.
It's all legal, right, Joe?
Did you just stop in a ditch on your way in?
I actually did not. It came from the front of the shop.
Just in front of the shop, okay.
So, all right. There's one thing I got to get.
I always wonder what happens across the road from me. I get to see it. This is an installment.
Yo Quaker is never boring.
You can pass this around.
Okay.
Thanks for well, hold on here. Let me get organized.
When I was out at the fair on Friday, my husband and I then went to a presentation by the DNR. It actually happened to be on pollinators, but then I went into that about growing, you know, not going to the ditches, whatever, and I felt like I actually could follow it. Thank you.
Yeah, that was good for me, too, to get you guys out. Appreciate you taking the time. So, the last time we spoke at this, you know, quarterly report, I think it was burn season, or just after burn season. So, I'm going to start there. I'm going to try to go quick. I do have a little bit of show and tell. I want it to be informative, a bit of business, and then we can learn something. So, we burned the Prairie Rail Trail. Did I already scare him off?
Yeah, it looks like it. We'll just go with yes.
I've done that before. So the Prairie, you know, the Prairie Rail Trail is a remnant. We've heard the talk or the word remnant a couple times. Mike, you said it already this morning. I still think it's this morning. Just about. So it's one of our neatest linear areas we have. So we don't spray that very often for brush, so it gets brushy. So what do? We burn it. So we burn it, and that plant that I just distributed, that is the Mission Lily. It's also commonly known as a Turk's Cat Lily because it was named by old botanists because upside down it has like a Turk's Cat looking thing. So the and Cindy, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You're the prairie guru here, but. The conservation coefficient of conservation on that plant from 1 to 10 on like how cool it is a 6, which is pretty good. You got to be really rare-ish, neat plant to get an 8, 9, 10 up in that. So it's a kind of a neat plant to have, and it happened because we burned. So just a little tidbit of information.
So when I see that in the ditches popping up, and I can't think of right where I would point you, but you see that right now in a ditch.
You would not see that. We that's the only place I've seen it.
I will find that. I know I've got your phone number.
Okay. So,
thanks, Rick.
Moving on. Late spring, early summer, we got our seasonal people hired. It was quite a process. And finally, we did get one right at safety day, and then they were both great kids. The next one came. in about the first week in June, which is, you know, a little later than normal. We worked hard through the summer. They had things going on, and so they left actually 2 weeks ago. So typically that doesn't happen very often. They stay up until school, but they had things going on. So it's been Tyler and I running the show, and the reason I say that is because we do have out there a position open for 6 months, possibly at that time full-time, 40 hours a week. I guess you really can't say full-time. It's a 40-hour week position to help IRVM do their fall-winter stuff, and that's all on the website out there. A little bit of prescribed fire, some clearing trees out of open ditches, some seed harvest, and some hybrid seeds, some planting. So right as the summer staff came on, we had safety committee meeting. We had a safety day, and we went right into weed control. So that was Tyler doing most of that, and the other staff, we did the planting. And as you know, what happened late spring, early summer, we had a lot of rain. And so a lot of those sites got washed out. Darren and his crew, they've done a good job getting back. They're busy digging every day. I haven't. It's kind of happened in what we call the dog days of summer. I'm not going to go back and seed right now. It's not the best time to plant your yard. We're going to wait till it cools down a little bit. Another couple, 3 weeks, we'll get back to seeding. So that's where we're at with that. So weed control, we've basically focused on hard surface roads. We did spend a lot more time on gravel this year, mainly in Palestine Township. We had some landowner operators down there that bent our ear pretty good, so we just spent some time down there. We haven't done that in a while, driven the gravel roads as much, so that helped out you know, our relationships with that area, and you know, we fell a little bit behind on the pavements, but it's all good. The brush contractors were done a week ago Wednesday, so they were here for 10 days. They came in, and they worked 12 to 14 hours a day. We did put out a press release prior to them coming in to the public to kind of see what's going on. We were a little short in Franklin Township on brush control, but we're going to try to pick that up in-house, so if we can, among all the other stuff going on. So, we did get some input from the public, a little bit of concerns, a few pats on the back saying thanks for controlling the brush, what are you using? Not really going to go into that much. There is a couple concerns I'm following up on to make sure things were done according to our policy. So that's where we're at with that. Any questions on the brush contractors? Drainage ditch stuff. So Tyler's been out. He's done a good job with that sprayer that we built. He's done the drainage ditches. I'm not going to say all the names, but three of them up north. And then now he's moving to Milford 32 and to Grant 5. So we did send letters out in November, letting people know that we were going to be gaining access on next to the open ditches, and we haven't had any problems. So that letter worked out great. People knew we were coming, so it's a good idea. I'm glad we did that. Moving along, a little bit of equipment. Glitches at the moment. I don't want to go into that. We talked briefly a little bit about our boom mower. It's a good piece of equipment, although it's old.
You've had it since the mid-90s, right?
1999, but it only has 1,800 hours. So it's been one of the most reliable tractors we have. But you just don't trade in a boom mower because that whole thing's specialty made. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at different options as we discussed. There might be another tractor available we can switch to not trade in, and I'm working on that. So next is our getting ready to combine. All right, we got the new combine, newish combine. It's at Van Wall right now getting looked at. They do a combine once over just to kind of give you a heads up on what might be really wrong with it before we take it out. Obviously, we're not going to get it painted and make it all shiny. We're just going to make sure it's a functioning unit at the best price we can. And we do have, I believe, 4 public seed harvests coming up, 3 in September and 1 in October, early October. So we're going to get some seed rolling in.
How many acres?
So, what's that?
How many acres of seed are you going to harvest?
I go by pounds. So, and I can speak for Amy Oakham. A lot of it's hand harvest, Marty, so she weighs that, and I don't have the figures. And then for pounds, usable pounds for me is around the 300 mark, and that's a lot of bulk at 10%. I'm going to guess we do about 20 acres of seed harvesting through the 3 or 4 different nurseries, but with this new combine, we can do more.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Odds and ends. So I think I brought one out. Right. Something we've been working on. Now, who's going to really know what IRBM is? But I didn't come up with the design. It's kind of standard throughout the state, the no spray, maybe not the IRBM part. But we're working on providing a program, a policy, where those folks that don't want us to spray in Story County, okay, are going to sign up. We have a map right now. There's over 2 dozen sites, and I'm glad people don't want it, not really happy, glad, just glad they're concerned about herbicide use. So they call us up and say, please don't spray. We're not going to spray. But now we're going to give them signs and the option to do what Darren does at work in the right-of-way permit. So they will now have to control the weeds and brush in their right-of-way, in front of their residence we're talking about, okay? And that makes everybody happy, because if we just say we're not going to spray, then things get out of hand.
Right.
And so we're working through that process. Any questions on that?
Good luck. On that.
Well, all right.
Do you get phone calls? It's part of the process.
I get a few phone calls.
You get a few phone calls.
Be right back. One more thing. So, one of the phone calls I get quite often is this time of year. And it's this plant. Does anybody know what this is?
An thistle?
Oh, so you pointed it out. Okay.
What kind of thistle?
Is that a Canadian thistle?
Native.
It's a native thistle. We know it's native because it has white underneath the leaves.
Okay.
But it's still on the noxious weed list. Back in the day, when they made the noxious weed law, they put all this species of thistle in the weed law. Okay? Mm-hmm. This, I believe, is it's either tall or field thistle. I think it's tall thistle. So you see these right now. These are all going to be purple. Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think these are going to run them out of the county, take over their fields, do things like that. So we're going to get a lot of calls on tall thistle. The problem with that is they stay in place pretty good. They're really not. The weed law's out of date. They're not that obnoxious. We may go do something with these if it's a site distance issue or something in that respect. But for the most part, it kind of breaks my heart, because when you go up here to like 491 down, it's full of monarchs or full of bees and things. So it's a good pollinator species too. Uh-huh. But it is on a noxious weed list. The next one, this is the only two I have. This is cup plant. So it kind of forms a cup right here. If you get lost, Rick, out in the wilderness, you can drink from this.
Drink from cup plant. Good. It's important for me to know.
Maybe communion. I don't know. So this is yellow, and a lot of people think this is sunflower. Noxious sunflower. So they'll call us up and want us to go out and do something with it. just a little bit of education goes a long way. So, any questions on the plan?
Good.
Nope. So, I really believe that's all I have. No, I have one more thing, which is kind of important. We've been working on a project over by the county, old county home. I call it the Couser Project. Can I call it that, Marty, I guess?
Well, I'm calling it.
They have decided to make a field day of this. We got a really late start on it because of all the rain. We're working with a bunch of different folks. There is some washing and some work that we need to do. I'm going to have the Pheasant Forever, Story County Pheasant Forever chapter come out. We don't have to buy the material, but we're going to volunteer to put in some silt logs and some erosion fabric. I might need the erosion fabric first and the silt logs, but we're going to make that project look nice, and we have a field day going on. You know, you guys.
Yeah, it's 2 days. It's 28th and 29th.
Right, and that's in network with the Ag, the Farm Progress, right? Or not?
I don't know that. It's close, but then again,
this is the evening. You don't need to go every day to the Farm Progress, so you can. But anyway,
sorry.
No, here's one of your. This falls right in, dovetails right nicely in the conversation we just had with Pat in regards to willing partners. As far as monitoring or whatnot, this is going to be a site. This is going to be the first go-tos. Because it's right north of town here. He's already doing this in conjunction with Monsanto Conservation Department. To get there, it is right on the west. What is it? West Indian Creek there? What is that?
Correct.
So this is one of our impaired streams. We already have your first one of your first go-tos, and I think Bill would be more than willing to cite something.
And they were talking about doing two separate nights.
And they are.
Well, they are doing two nights, but it's going to be just the same thing both nights.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they'll want us there or to talk about it, I guess.
Well, I mean, it truly is a restoration of what was a garbage dump that drained. To see what it was and what it has become is shocking, because the thing is, if you were willing to devote the time, because he's put private dollars into making this into something that on a presentation basis will just, if he does nothing else, has improved water quality, as you don't see soil transmigration into the creek itself.
Outstanding.
Yep.
Question for Joe. Joe, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the show and tell. Next we've got conservation, Mike Cox.
Did you
refresh
on the cup?
Joe?
Okay.
You can have the weeds back, Joe.
I'm living here for you.
Very good. So, first, just a few, and I'm going to keep this brief to a few things. One, to that Stone Remnant Learning Portal. You know that we're in the second year of construction there, second contract, construction contract. They're moving along quite nice. They've got a good portion of the concrete trail poured. They're working on backfilling that as we speak. And so we expect by the end of this month that we'll have all of the, this one caveat, but for the most part, all of the concrete trail poured, and we'll be started on the permeable trail. And the permeable trail will probably extend a little bit into September. So that's coming along really well. Part and parcel with Tedesco, but not just related to Tedesco. I had a conversation with the folks from the Farm Clinic and their marketing for the people, and broached the idea of developing what we call prescription trails program. And so in other words, getting clinicians or physicians to prescribe outdoor exercise. And the folks at McFarland Clinic have embraced this wholeheartedly. And And so we're going to do a little pilot project at Tedesco and the trails right around that area, which dovetails with their presence at the research park. And then we'll probably look to expand that a little bit further with all of our trail network. So tremendous project. I think there's a lot of potential there. It will bring a lot of visibility, if you will, to the health benefits of getting outside and using trails. So wonderful project. We're glad to have the McFarland Clinic support that. Hickory Grove. As you know, we're in a drawdown stage with the lake. We've probably got about 6 to 7 feet that's been drawn down as right now. We're still drawing it down. We're going to take off the top 10 feet at the moment, and all of that in preparation for the archaeology survey that needs to happen before we go to bid with our dredging work. So that's why we're drawing it down now. The idea is to hit a bid letting in November for that project. So at the moment, everything is lining up in order to do that. We did relax the fishing regulations there a few weeks ago, about a month ago. And so there have been people taking advantage of that. However, at the moment, it's nearly impossible to get a boat on the lake. It's difficult, but we did have a good, say, 3 weeks of relaxed fishing regulations and a lot of people that did that. So that was nice to see people utilizing that. We budgeted money in the FY19 budget to do that restoration project, or the county portion of that restoration project, which is 25% of the overall project costs, 75% being borne by the Department of Natural Resources. As we've moved through with design, we've looked at a couple of things that we'd like to see as improvements in the lake. One is dredging the east portion of the lake. So that portion of the lake on the east side of 680th Street or Avenue. And so that might be an add-on to that cost. And then we're also looking at some improvements to the boat launch by the campground and beach. And part of the rationale, one, is we know we need more boat launch capacity, if you will. On the busy days, all of our parking for boat trucks and trailers fills up, and if it fills up now, you can only imagine what's going to happen once we get a renovated lake. So we're looking at some boat area, boat launch improvements as well, and some access improvements as we move forward. And those might be additional items as well that we'll look for some additional funding for. Maybe there's some opportunities for some grant funding there as well. So we'll continue to look for that, but expect to have a project that hopefully we get favorable bids and we can award that here yet this calendar year. The plan would be then, if we get a favorable contract and favorable weather, then they could start work yet this winter. But for the most part, that lake will be dry. We're planning on that lake being dry through next summer and then filling again in the spring of 20. So,
I got to ask there, Mike, as we had people have gone out and fished and been appreciative of the fact that you really opened up the lake. We're drawing it down. How long will it take to fill it? This is a question I get asked. I mean, okay, yeah, we're drawing it down, but now that it's going to be deeper and reshaped in a lot of ways, what's the time frame ideal that you see? If somebody asks us, I said, I have no idea. I'll ask, so I'm asking.
That's a very good answer.
How wet a spring are we going to have?
I have no idea.
Well, it's just, it comes up in the conversation because that's the end. You know, at the point where you've done all the restoration, you've done the dredging, you've done the archaeological analysis, you've done what you want to do, how long is it going to take to fill it?
people that were here when that lake was originally built accounted or basically gave accounts of that lake almost filling overnight when it was built.
Okay.
So it all depends on Mother Nature.
Well, I get
that. How much rain we get.
If we get it done
and can take advantage of maybe some late winter snow or some early spring rains, then it'll fill in a heartbeat.
All right.
It won't take very long. It's 4,000 acre watershed, so if Mother Nature's favorable, it'll fill really quickly. If we're in a drought condition, whole other story.
Thank you.
That's a good answer. I don't know.
Well, I can stay with that one because that's what I'm going to give them.
Yeah, very good. Prairie Rail Trail, just real briefly, as you know, we've been working on this project for a number of years. I met with the Zeering City Council last night with the request of using city right-of-way on the north and south side of Main Street for a trail connection to the street and to the sidewalk on the north side. They're taking that under consideration, haven't made a decision yet. I need to give them some follow-up information here, and then we'll move forward with that. They're willing to have a special meeting and bring that forward for a vote prior to their next monthly meeting. So I expect that we'll have some answers from them very quickly on moving forward with that.
Mike, a week ago, I went to McCall's for, they have annual next week quarantine, and as I was going through the line, I got asked, okay, but when are we going to get the trail, right? When is it going to be done? And then I was at McCall's for meeting last night, and I got asked again. So is there anything else holding it up other than the Zeering situation?
So the project we're working on right now, just to be clear, the project we're working on right now is constructing the trail. First off, putting an intersection at the trail with Highway 65, and then constructing the trail from the highway into the city of Zeering, connecting to Main Street and their sidewalk system. We're not planning construction work around McCallsburg. Our long-range plan is to pave that trail all the way through Roland to Zeering and eventually connect from Roland to Story City. That's our long-range plan. But at the moment, the section we're working on is just west of Zeering.
Okay. Could you and I communicate more about this then later? All right, because I think they want an update about when they feel that the paved part will come.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All right. We can certainly talk about that. Any questions? Any other questions on PRT? Okay. Quickly, we're under contract with Construction to do some water trail access improvements. We received a grant from the Department of Natural Resources Water Trails Program to reconstruct two river accesses on the Skunk River, one at Peterson near Peterson Park and one north of Cambridge near Atascu Park, where the County Blacktop crosses the Skunk River there. They've completed the work at Peterson, and as we speak, they're working at Askew, and so that will be completed real soon. Those will be nice launches. There'll be concrete launch pads that are designed so they won't silt in all the time. There'll be some maintenance, of course, on those, but they should hold up really well and be good accesses for anyone getting on or off the river. The only other thing I want to mention is coming up October. October 7th is our next fall festival. So if that's not on your calendar, we sure encourage you to attend that. October 7th, we're having a band, the Vinyl Vinyl Vagabonds is the band, and then we're having some food catered by Monkey Duck. So that'll be a good event. And then lastly, it's that time of year when our staff meets with all of the schools and teachers, principals, etc. And so we're doing our teacher meetings right now. Our staff are meeting with every elementary teacher and every middle school teacher in the county, and just to design their curriculum for the coming year. So our staff is busy with that, and it's nice to be able to have that interface with all of those teachers. So that's it.
Good. Question for Mike.
Nothing. Congratulations. You have a very robust and capable department. Keep it up.
Did the valve work at Victory Grove, or did they have to jerry rig something?
They worked.
They worked, and it's been what? 30 years since we opened it.
I think it was opened. I believe it was opened in the 90s.
Okay.
For some repair, but it's been quite some time, 20 plus years since that's been opened. So.
Uh-huh.
But we got it.
Good. Thanks.
That is a good story.
No other reports. Public forum number two. Opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything. If you'd like to come up and comment, come on. What about Cindy? You got anything for us today?
No, thank you for that.
Absolutely. All right. Liaison assignments. Marty.
Pass.
Laura.
I'm just going to bring up that in case we have time from 4 to 5:30 today, CFR is having their open house for their 50th. For 50 years of providing services, calls for it is always a great, relaxed meeting, and there was some good discussion down there, and just they did pass their ordinance to allow people to drive ATVs and UTVs and golf carts around in town. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you can't go to Zurich and find an automobile for ATVs, UTVs.
It's the future.
If that is.
And golf carts. All right, if there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we're adjourned.